You're listening to Justice Radio on WMPG with Rob Ruffner from the Maine Ancient Defense Center. And today we're speaking with Benjamin Ribello. And first, I'd like to give him a chance to introduce himself.
Yeah. Hey, thank you, Rob. My name, like you said, is Benjamin Ribello. And I am somebody who went through the penal system, incarcerated, and worked with an attorney from Rob's law firm. And it was on her behest that I end up on this radio station. So I'm glad to be here.
Thank you for being willing to talk about your story and your experience with the system. Do you want to start with where you are today, or do you want to start with where you were back then? What led to you meeting attorney Annie Greenbaum?
I think starting from the beginning would probably be easiest. So I was somebody who suffered from addiction for quite a while. From a young age, started off experimenting. Life kind of took a downturn post-college. And for well over a decade, I used many illicit drugs, and it kind of drove my life downhill to the point where in 2019, I moved to Maine to try to kind of figure out that addiction problem. And unfortunately, things got a lot worse. And all the things come along with addiction, you know, broken family, lived out of a vehicle for a long time. And, you know, my life just, it became poor in every meaning of the word. And ultimately, I started an in and out of jail quite often. And at some point along that journey, I was introduced to Annie Greenbaum, who became my court-appointed lawyer because I didn't have a dollar to my name. And yeah, I mean, through that whole process, we can get into that a little more in depth. I ended up being remanded to a state-run rehab facility, which again, Annie helped facilitate get me in there. I was also remanded to the York County Treatment Court. From there, sober living. This is a sober living home, the Bridge House, which was formerly the Journey House. I now am the program manager for the men's house in Sanford. I also started a successful construction business, and that's kind of where I'm at today.
Oh, that's a good trajectory of your story. Was Attorney Greenbaum the first attorney you had in Maine?
I would say no, just because there were several instances. So definitely not her. I did have a lawyer that I paid for with the first couple of situations that arose, first breaking the law in Maine, or at least being caught breaking the law in Maine. Yeah, I also had charges that were out of state in Massachusetts with a different lawyer, obviously. And then at some point in the mix, forgive me because I don't remember exactly when, but I believe it would have been sometime in 2020. Annie and I were introduced while I was being arraigned in Cumberland County Jail.
Given that you responded positively to our office reaching out to you to see if you'd want to tell your story on the show, and what we talked a little bit about before we started the show today, what was it like meeting some attorney that, you know, you never met before that the court's appointing? And, you know, how did that go, you know, in the beginning, you know, with Attorney Greenbaum in terms of, you know, someone you've never met before? And
well, like I said, so I had other attorneys prior to, and they generally give you a court appointed immediately if you don't have the, you know, the funds in the bank to pay for your own lawyer. And being an addict, I recall every single interaction with a first lawyer as always, how quickly can you get me out of here? Because I needed to be, you know, getting my medication, what I was using to make myself feel better, because I was immediately going through, you know, physical dependence withdrawals. And I, of course, early on was scared. It was my first trips to jail, and I didn't know what it was going to be like. Later on, that kind of wore off, and I was able to just settle in and know what I was in there for. But I do recall meeting with Annie, and she was very straightforward and very stern, and stern in the sense that she wasn't going to listen to me ask about how quickly I could get out, because she was well aware of my situation and how serious it was, and how they were not going to be releasing me anytime soon. So she did her part in the sense that she didn't make any false promises and she didn't sugarcoat anything. She really made it clear what I was looking at.
I can only imagine, given the situation you were in at that time, in terms of, as you put it, really wanting to get out to get your medicine, the addiction still talking to you, helping to set priorities for yourself, you know. And then you mentioned that you ended up going into a treatment program, which is probably, it sounds like it was different than what you were thinking about when you first met Annie. What were the things that an attorney did with you that allowed you to to take a different path rather than, as you mentioned in the beginning, focusing on how can I get out the quickest?
So like I mentioned before, it was 2019 when I first moved to Maine, and I went directly into a sober living home, and I had experience with short bouts of sobriety, you know, starting with a couple weeks, relapsing a couple months, relapsing. And, you know, having, I was raised in a good home. I know how to behave as a good person. I know, I guess, speak well and act well and do what you're supposed to do. So I had had this experience with sobriety. I knew what it meant to be a good person. So those were things that I did seek. However, in active addiction, all of that went out the window. And I was completely 100% under the control of my addiction. Now, that being said, early on in these jail stays, I was going through withdrawals. Again, I was scared in the beginning, so of course I wanted to get out. But once settling in, once becoming at least stable past the withdrawals and became comfortable as I could be within a jail, but comfortable physically, my mindset usually did stay lean towards wanting to remain sober. So I would look to get back into sober living. I would look to, well, generally just to get back into sober living, I guess. But I was willing to do whatever it took to get out because I also just did not want to be in jail at that point. I was very understanding of being there for the reason of my law breaking. I knew that I was guilty. I knew the things I did were wrong. I just couldn't control myself at the time and allowed my addiction to really run my life. So looking for anything, sure, but I really did want to get into sober living, and Annie did work with me on that. And I remember one time her having information that I just didn't know how she could have even known, which was to get me into the rehab, and that happened on a later stay. So I knew that she was going out of her way to figure things out for me on my behalf, and that was really important to me. That felt like she really cared about what she was doing.
When you were inside, there's other people, many, most probably, are there for, in my anecdotal experience in dealing with the people that I've, you know, been meeting with at the jail in my practice, you know, there's a very high percentage of mental health, substance abuse, or a combination. You know, it's pretty rare to meet someone that's there that has neither one of those issues. What were the things that were helpful for you, you know, while you were in there that you received from, you know, your attorney or from other resources that, you know, sometimes I think we forget about people that work in the jail that try to assist people with locating programs and those sorts of things. You know, what were the things that you found helpful when you're, you know, before you were able to get into a program?
Yeah, so you're not wrong. It was, I was surrounded by many others with addiction problems like myself, and definitely many mental health problems. And that may have taken away from the satisfaction a little bit when I found out that Annie suggested me for this radio segment. But knowing that, I was very aware of my surroundings. I was able to read people well enough to know that I could isolate myself from maybe some of that, the negative behavior that comes along with inmates as such. But I will say that mentioning the mental health, that is kind of an important thing to me, because I did see people who were suffering from severe mental health problems who were not, in my opinion, and I'm not, you know, I have no medical background, but seeing people suffering from mental health that maybe weren't getting the help they needed, there were people. So my longest stays were in Cumberland County Jail. And, you know, I believe there's understaffing there. I would see turnover of the faces working there. And, you know, I think they were also dealing with such a huge issue with COVID being during that time, that maybe I didn't see what the best representation of the offerings of that jail could have been, which, you know, could include programming for people in addiction, or I guess just medical staff, or who could have been trained to handle things like this. You know, again, I'm not medically, I don't have a medical background, so I don't want to speak too much on it, because of course they are dealing with a huge situation that is well beyond my knowledge. But I personally did suffer from, you know, living an addicted life. I contracted something and it made me very sick while I was in the jail. And it took I want to say close to a month to be seen after putting in daily medical requests. And it actually took someone who I consider a friend of mine now, who I had known prior to using, ended up being in the same block as me. He saw how sick I was and he spoke up for me because I wasn't willing to make waves in the jail because I thought that if I kept my head down and was quiet, it would be better for any situation. Now, I didn't see people receiving negative feedback from asking. I don't want to say that there's a sense of, you know, keep your mouth shut in our jail situation. But in my mind, I just said, they'll figure it out. They'll get to it. And after almost a month, that friend of mine very sternly spoke to the medical staff when they came in for daily meds. And at that point, I was finally seen. So again, you know, a turnover of faces, are they understaffed? They were dealing with COVID. So just health situations in general, and from what I saw, were not being addressed well enough. And also having people with mental health within the same block as people without mental health, I saw people get hurt, people who would just attack someone for no reason. You know, these are things that you don't go to jail to live comfortably. You know, you go to jail because you broke the law and you need to deal with it. However, there are still basic human rights that are needed to be met, and including medical help. And so, you know, I don't think I could have really reached out to Annie, or at least in my mind, I didn't think that reaching out to Annie would make any differences. But I'm sure that I could have, and I could have spoken up about it. But at the time, I did not. So
we got to pause right now for a brief message. When we come back, let's talk about your journey from jail to where you are now, and sort of the seriousness of the charges and the opportunities you were given through the process, and then the work you've done afterwards to get where you are today. Again, you're listening to Justice Radio with Rob Ruffner. Again, we are speaking with Ben Ribello about his experience in the Maine criminal justice system. So, Ben, thank you again for speaking with us today and being willing to share your experience, which is something that we don't hear enough about, I think, and we're very grateful. We're looking for more opportunities to do this, and you're really the first person who's taken us up on our request to, you know, to tell their story, because they really are our clients' stories and people's individual stories through the system. So you had mentioned that you had been struggling with the substance use disorder in and out of the jail when you first moved to Maine. And then it seems like it all came to a head, you know, after Annie got involved. There was a certain mass and weight of charges that sort of changed that pattern. You know, you weren't just getting to get in and out anymore with that. So why don't you talk about what that was like for you, whatever you would like to share, and then, you know, what you took advantage of and what difference it has made for you or not.
Yeah. So of course, with the addiction, there's a lot of common charges that relate to it and come with it. You know, I had obviously plenty of possession charges, theft, operating under the influence. Those were just stacking up. I had a long bout of arrests during COVID where they were not able to take in inmates unless you were, you know, a danger to society, I guess, or yourself. But I don't know if you'd go to jail at that point or to a mental hospital. But either way, I was able to get new charges, be released, and be right back on the street doing it again. So I had just a slew of active charges within adjudication. And Annie actually worked with me twice looking for a global resolution. She was able to work with a lawyer in Massachusetts to get agreements from both Maine and Massachusetts to allow me a continuance without finding or just a filing in Maine, which meant that I would be released at the first time to a sober house. And if I was able to refrain from breaking the law, remain sober, adhere to all bail conditions, I would be able to have certain charges dropped. I would be able to stay out of jail. And I pled out. I maybe made it. Well, in the Massachusetts case, I went down there to the courthouse having just relapsed the night before. I was under the influence. I left the courthouse, and within 12 hours, I was charged with new charges and just completely ruined any chance I had of that initial continuance without finding. Was kind of quote unquote on the run for a few weeks. I wasn't actively being followed, but you know, at any point I could have been arrested. And ultimately I was after my final overdose, which I would just like to mention that in my active addiction, I overdosed 13 times, Narcan 13 times. And, you know, by the grace of Narcan and the people using it, I'm alive today. I'm very grateful to be alive. On that final overdose, I signed myself out of an ambulance and was immediately met by the Sanford police, who were very kind and worked with me, but they had to arrest me on an active warrant because of the new charges that broke my filing. At that point, I was sent to York County and then transferred up to Cumberland County, where I was told that I would be remanded to a rehab, which Annie was, she went above and beyond, in my opinion. She did everything she could. I was in there for about 3 months. I ended up going to Lehman Way Recovery Center, which was a state-funded rehab, sharing a parking lot with the York County Jail. Unfortunately, today that facility has been shut down due to funding issues. We did work. I worked with them closely afterwards. As I was running the sober house, I was taking their patients and giving them a place to figure out their early recovery. You know, Annie really did a lot to get me in there. Being a state-funded place, they didn't always have open beds. They didn't always have the funding to take someone else on. And she continued to work. And when I met the coordinator at the rehab, I was surprised to hear just how many times Annie reached out on my behalf to get me into that rehab. I'm hoping that the reason she reached out so many times is because she did see a potential in me. But also I'm sure that she is just adamant about doing a good job. So, you know, very happy to hear that. I did 6 months within that facility and was remanded to the York County Treatment Court upon exit and completion of that rehab. I am grateful to say that from that day that I last overdosed and was arrested, it was June 29th of 2021. I have remained sober. I do have
congratulations.
A thank you. You know, a complete 180 from how I was living, with a lot of help along the way. And I do, you know, I do speak quite often about the help that I received, and people love to tell you, well, it was tough and you did it for yourself and you did a lot of the work. And sure, I did a lot, but really I was given the right people in my life. And I do believe Annie to be one of those people who really just dealt with me and my continual breaking of the law and just not being able to control myself or abstain from doing the things I shouldn't have been doing. And she just did her part. I obviously, then again at the rehab, they helped save my life. They were a huge part of it. Treatment court, again, it was everything I needed upon release to keep me in check. And that was I believe a 13-month program. It took me just about 14 months to fully complete it. And at that point, I did see Annie again. I was not so much in contact with her during that because there was nothing for her to really do. But I will say I was very happy and proud of myself and was glad to see Annie at the back end of things too and able to shake her hand. And especially because I believe that due to COVID, that day that I saw her in person on treatment court graduation, which would have been, I want to say, September of 23, potentially. Forgive me for not knowing the exact dates, but it was the first time I'd ever seen her in person. We had only met over Zoom throughout the entire process for years. And yeah, it was kind of a, you know, just full circle moment. It was great for me. I'm like I said, I'm very grateful to be alive. I think the system saved my life in a very roundabout way, and it took some time. But today, I'm a huge advocate for arresting people. You know, my mindset has changed completely. Getting me off the street out of active addiction saved my life. I was, like I mentioned, many overdoses, and to be in a safe place away from the drugs meant that I was not in fear of dying every day of my life. So there was some relief there actually towards the end of getting arrested. But yeah, just I'm a huge advocate for sometimes having people arrested and just put in a safe place.
You mentioned, sort of the things that fell into place for you to support you on, to where you are now, Attorney Greenbaum, the Lyman Way, and then the drug court being things that were there and helped you, get where you're going today. And then you mentioned, Lyman Way currently, isn't there because of funding issues. It sounds like if it wasn't for, in your particular circumstances, those three components, being available to you, or different versions that were as good as them, that it may not have been the same story that we're talking about today. That they, if, as you mentioned, you're a proponent of getting people off the street and into a safe place, arresting them, but that doesn't sound like that's the end of what we need to do and have in place as a system and as a society. We need the recovery, the treatment programs, and then the aftercare, whether that's a drug court program combined with sober living. It's a system that works together to meet the individual needs of the individual client. And you were fortunate that, Lyman was still there, right? There's some counties that don't have a drug court, right? But York County did have a drug court, and that's what you needed at the time, right? So what are other things that we on the outside, that didn't experience from your perspective, need to be more conscious of, or what are some other things that you think could be in place that would help there be more stories like yours for individuals, give more people the opportunity to have this trajectory when they interact with the system, as opposed to, a different one?
Yeah. So this is an important point for sure. As an addict, I can't figure anything out on my own. I think that's one of the biggest things that we have to first admit. I went to AA and did a lot of work through AA and NA. And, you have to admit that I'm not the most important person in the room. I don't know everything and I have a lot to learn. So I need teachers. I need help. And programming within the jail didn't exist while I was there. And I say while I was there because, again, it was during COVID. So having people come in and out of the jail was definitely a difficult thing for them to facilitate. That being said, I don't know how extensive the programming was prior to or even now to this day. I do know that I heard that it was never really as impressive as it could have been. But, I don't know how that works in terms of funding and what jails need in order to facilitate something like that. But having people come in that can run groups, AA, NA, people with the knowledge and the willingness to help. And now there are groups like that. And if I had been able to experience that in jail, maybe things could have taken an earlier start. But that's not how my story worked out. So seeing more programming, I think, would be a very important thing in a jail. Just any type of drug and alcohol classes or counselors or case managers that could help people that were in my situation.
Yeah, I think that is absolutely correct. And I want to mention on something you said. I think that you should be very proud of where you are now, that I'm not taking away any of the things you said about the things that lined up for you, from your attorney to the treatment inpatient and then the drug court and the aftercare. Those are all things that were there and were helpful. But, given, your journey and then in your work with the Sober House, that a lot of people aren't where you are now. that were where you were back in 2020. In addition to having the resources and helping the teachers, as you put it, for yourself, you had to do the work, because no one can upload it into your brain and make you do it. I'm not suggesting that when people fail, it's because they're not trying hard, because addiction's a disease, not just a choice. Again, I'm speaking as someone who's a layperson. I'm not trained in it. But I really think that you should be proud of where you got to and where you went to now. And the one data point that jumped out the most was in when you mentioned that, the drug court took 14 months for you. In my experience, again, it's limited, anecdotal, that 14 months for a successful outcome shows that you were really working the program. Because while it technically maybe can be finished in 13 months, rarely is it done that quickly. And in my experience of 14 months with a successful graduation completion of the program, that is, in my opinion, an experience, a sign that somebody's really working the program and working hard to use the opportunities and tools and supports that they're given access to. So I'm very impressed with where you are today and in your journey, and very grateful that you chose to share it with us. If there's any listeners out there that know, that have their own story that they're interested in telling, or have friends or family that have gone through it, and you should feel free to contact the Main Engine Defense Center, because we will always be looking for potential people to interview and to share this different perspective on our system if they're willing to. But I, again, thank you so much for meeting with us. And again, you're the one that did all the work with the tools and opportunities you had, and you should be very proud of where you are now, in my opinion.
Thank you. I do appreciate that. I do give myself a little more credit now, this, you know, today, than I may have done back then. I will say that the 14 months instead of 13 did come about due to my poor punctuality. I like to be a few minutes late, and it put me behind a month, unfortunately. But yes, I did see quite a few people who either did not complete the program or were in there for even multiple years at a time. But yeah, and you know, you had mentioned reaching out to you guys for help if anybody is looking up for it. And I would like to mention also, you know, the sober house that I work for, the Courage House, is part of a larger group called the Courage Center, and we do provide sober living for both men and women. We have several houses across the state, including Biddeford, Sanford, Westbrook, Gorham. The main center is in Gorham, where we have a IOP, case management, doctors on staff. So if anyone is looking for help, please feel free to reach out, and also visit the couragecenter.me with any questions you might have, and we'll be more than happy to help anyone.
Well, Ben, thank you again so much for joining us today and telling your story. I'm glad that you know, our office was able to be a positive component, you know, a supporting cast member on your story and where you are today. And I want to thank everyone for listening to Justice Radio. Tune in next time, when we'll have a fresh topic and a new perspective on the criminal justice system. And a big thank you to Samuel James for his gift of music that opens and closes each episode of our series.